The time has passed, and we'll call this meeting to order. I think, do we have a quorum? And we have a quorum. Representative Norton read the minutes of February 3rd.
I move their passage, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. She moved the passage. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Passed. Thank you. Next. First on our agenda today is we have four groups of testifiers. Have been told they have 10 minutes to present with questions an overview of Minnesota Regional Development Commission's Minnesota Association of Development Organizations, MADO. And I'm calling up for the testifying table, Kim Van, help me out. Famulek? I help correct that when I'm wrong, please.
Famulek.
Well, we got that one. Don Hegland, and Bob Voss, and Nicole Mickelson. Welcome to our committee. Whoever's going to testify first, please give your name for the record. So we know you're here 100 years from now.
Wonderful.
As Groffel likes to say.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. We're here to represent the Regional Development Commissions in Minnesota. We're going to share a little bit about the history of RDCs and the work that we do. Before we get into a little bit of our presentation, I'm going to ask that each of our members with me today introduce themselves.
I'm Cam Fanfilik with the Northwest Regional Development Commission in Warren, Minnesota.
Nicole Grunswick-Mickelson with Region 9 Development Commission out of Mankato.
And I'm Bob Voss. I'm with the East Central Regional Development Commission with offices in Mora, Minnesota.
Welcome to our committee. Can't hear what you have to say.
Wonderful.
Can't wait to hear.
I just want to double check. We did send some handouts to you. One has a map on the back that shows our regions. You might be interested. Very good. And one has a list of projects. Looks like you have both. Wonderful. I'm going to start a little bit with the history. Minnesota passed the Minnesota Regional Development Act in 1969 in Minnesota statute, statute 462.381. In that statute, it identified Regional Development Commission boundaries. It identifies who our board is, which is made up of local elected officials from cities, counties, townships, school districts, tribal communities, and we have the ability to add some public interest reps as appropriate for each region. Also in that legislation, it gives us local levy authority, and it also defines the purpose of the RDCs, which I'm just going to quote from the legislation. It says, we are to work with and on behalf of local units of government to develop plans or implement programs to address economic, social, physical, and governmental concerns of each region of the state. So as you can imagine, the work that we do is quite diverse. And if you're looking at the map on one of our handouts, we have RDCs that cover almost all corners of the state. There are a few areas of the state that do not have RDCs. In statute, it also talks about RDCs are established and then can be dissolved by local jurisdictions. And so there are a couple areas that are not served by RDCs, but in one of those areas, the Moorhead to Fergus Falls to Alexander to Morris, kind of the West Central area, we work closely with the West Central Initiative, which is one of the initiative foundations you're going to hear from later this afternoon. And they do some of the same programs that RDCs do. But in the other two areas of the state, the St. Cloud area and the southeast part of Minnesota, we work with other organizations as well to do some work there. And some of my colleagues work closely in those regions to do some work. As a collaboration, because we have some external partners who are not regional development commissions, that's why we call ourselves Minnesota Association of Development Organizations. So most of us are RDCs. The four of us sitting before you today are all RDCs as designated by statute, but we have a lot of other partners that we work with. So the diverse work that we do is really dependent on the needs and the requests of our local jurisdictions. There are a few things we all do. One of those things is we contract annually with MnDOT for a planning grant. And we work with MnDOT to do some planning, programming, and public outreach for MnDOT. We work closely with the area transportation partnerships in each MnDOT district, and they prioritize federal funding, federal transportation funding, and we do a lot of work and support for those committees. One of the other things that we all do is we are all designated as an economic development district, and that designation comes from the U.S. Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration. And with the work that we do through EDA, we assist our local communities with a lot of economic and some community development type activities, which are created to start or to retain jobs, to create or retain jobs in our regions. And that work, as you imagine, the economic issues across the state, again, are very, very, very diverse. One of the documents that we create under our EDA planning grant is called a Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, which is really a comprehensive plan looking at economic issues customized to each region. And we work with local units of government through and local stakeholders, business, workforce centers, chambers of commerce, in a pretty significant public process to identify what those issues are in each of our regions. One of the other subsets of the EDA work that we do is we all operate a revolving loan fund. So we have gap financing available to businesses in our region. And again, with the goal of creating or maintaining jobs in our region. As kind of a offshoot to the SEDS that we all do, we're currently working on a project that we call Develop MN, Develop Minnesota, where we're looking at the common issues that we all have across the RDC regions. And we're working to identify those common issues, opportunities, and assets with the goal of really aligning our resources and opportunities with other organizations, state and federal agencies. And we're just in the process of starting that work now. One of the pieces of that will be identifying some specific metrics for the common things that we have across Greater Minnesota as economic issues for all of us. From there, the work that we do is very, very diverse. And on the sheet that looks like this, there's a bulleted list on this side that gives some examples of the diverse work that we do. So you can see it varies quite dramatically, and it's very different from region to region. Again, we're here to respond to the needs in our local region. But we're also going to share with you today, and I'll ask my colleagues to share some projects off of that detailed project example sheet of some of the work that we do that's different in each region. So I'll turn it over to my colleagues.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Bob Voss. I'm the Executive Director of East Central Regional Development Commission. We cover Pine, Isani, Chisago, Kanawha, and Mille Lacs counties. As Don mentioned, we're all significantly involved in economic development work, and where we've had a lot of success through our SETS process has been the way we convene our local units of government to talk about regional projects that have regional significance for increasing tax base and employment in our region. My area of the state has our status as an economic development district has been very successful over the years. We, through our partnerships with EDA, the state of Minnesota, and others, we've been able to get industrial parks built in a number of our communities. We've had expansions of utilities and infrastructure in communities. One probably more recent example was the Polaris manufacturing facility in Wyoming there that is recently doubling their size and in related employment. Most recently, we were successful in an application of federal EDA, and we actually were able to partner with Deed and Pine Technical College in Pine City to build a technology incubator there for small businesses. So that we had a ribbon cutting last year, and It was a $2.2 million project. $1.9 million actually came from the federal EDA, and then about $400,000 or so came from the DEEBS Greater Minnesota Development and Infrastructure Grant Program. So that was a really successful partnership for us. And that has, it's detailed in the sheet here, but the Small Business Development Center services are there. There's high-tech infrastructure there for high-tech businesses that can incubate there until they get their sea legs, so to speak, and can move out to our industrial parks in the region. That one's been very, very successful.
How many people do you have in that incubator building?
It just opened, and they're starting to have interviews or applicant process right now. So we're excited to see there. They're kind of there's a criteria they have to follow because their focus is kind of high tech businesses at this point. So they're the sorts of businesses. There's a screening process for that.
Thank you.
Nicole Grunswick-Mickelson, Region 9 Development Commission. One of the projects that I had highlighted on our sheet was our Highway 169 flood mitigation project. And through being an economic development district, we were able to work with MnDOT to help secure $9.8 million to raise the grade between Mankato and St. Peter at four flood-prone areas. So $9.8 million is the largest EDA grant to come out of the Chicago office, and that went directly to MnDOT to be able to do that project. That construction will be in 2016, and through that, an estimated over $10 million of private investment would also be coming through that, and that will help create 500 jobs as well. So through the kind of the unique partnership that development commissions have with being an economic development district and having that relationship with the federal EDA, we are able to get federal funds to go to a state agency to help our region. We are able to prove that that is a truly an economic development disaster when the Highway 169 is completely shut down for the 100-year floods that keep seeming to happen every other year. By looking at of the commuter shed and all of the data proving that South Central, that is our main corridor, and with the amount of trucks for hogs and soybeans and manufacturing, et cetera, we are able to help prove that that truly is an economic development disaster. So it was really a very creative, unique project that we were very proud of, and just one of the two federal EDA grants that we were able to have awarded that year. Another project we had was in the city of Blue Earth. We were able to help Faribault County Development Corp receive just shy of $1 million to help create a new industrial park where 169 and I-90 intersect in the city of Blue Earth. So that industrial park is getting started, and that's just another example of kind of the vital role that the development commissions play in kind of being that matchmaking and sharing resources to working across jurisdictions and across federal and state agencies. The other project that I had highlighted was with Xcel Energy Grant. We were able to, with Region 9, we have a renewable energy task force. We were able to help work with Farm America, which is just outside of Waseca, to receive the $600,000 for solar and wind installation for that nonprofit. It's an agricultural interpretive center. So we were able to help them receive that grant, which paid for the full project for them to have solar and wind installation on that site. So again, just another example of a very diverse projects, but the kind of the role that the development commissions play.
I'm Cam Fanfulick. I'm the executive director at the Northwest Regional Development Commission in Warren, Minnesota. So I cover the top seven counties in the northwest part of the state. One of the things that we have to do as regional agencies and regional development organizations is we're considered to be a convener. When there's issues that are happening around the state, we do a fair amount of getting people together that normally probably wouldn't get together if it wasn't for the fact that we know who folks are at the state and local and federal levels. So it's important that we play that role, and I can give you a very good example. I did a community planning project for the city of Oslo, which is a town of about 330, based on the Red River. The Red River, as you well know, is a flood-prone type area, and so we did community planning for them, but as a result of that community planning, we gathered together officials from both North Dakota and Minnesota to come up there and discuss what we can do to keep Highway 1 open during flood times. You may be aware that Oslo is basically an island for about 3 or 4 weeks of the spring when flooding gets bad. So it's kind of ugly because it is a major arterial there, and so we need to help communities with that type of planning and getting folks together that can potentially help. Another example I gave last week at the Ag Policy Committee, I had a friendship with a newly elected county commissioner in Winona County. A couple of years ago, we went through a leadership program together, and as a result of that, she knew that I was working in economic development. Well, Southeast Minnesota, as you remember, went through a heck of a flood situation that really raised heck with everything. The problem in Southeast Minnesota is that it is not a federally designated economic development district. And because of that, it's more difficult to access federal funds. It's more difficult to get in touch with the people that you need to when you don't know who they are. So basically, on that relationship alone, she called me. And this is where I think the state of Minnesota gets great bang for the buck. We try to let our best practices go around the state. We try to help as many people as we can. It's not just specific to our region. So I was able to help her with making connections at the federal and state level. Helped her with knowing who to talk to and who to bring to the table in order to help with a quicker recovery to Southeast Minnesota. Now, that's not a huge thing, but it is a thing when you live there and you're flooded and you're going through all that destruction. You need to know where to turn, and so I think that that was an important role for us to play. So the Northwest was helping the Southeast. I can't make it any better than that. What we really try to do is serve the public in as cost-effective a manner as we can. We try to reach across boundaries. Our goal really is to serve all of Minnesota, and especially with the conditions that are happening on the western part of the state, it's important that we remain internationally competitive, that we help our rural businesses and develop an economy that's strong as possible to help facilitate the state's economic growth. So that's all I have. Thank you.
With that, I think you get a little flavor of the diversity of the work that we do, but at this point, I think we'd like to open it up to the committee for questions about RDCs and what we do.
Certainly, I came up with one thing. You all don't do the same things. One might have one program where the other one doesn't.
That's exactly.
And I think at one time you were one size fits all, but you certainly aren't that way anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably adapted to what was necessary for your areas. But transportation, MnDOT has a habit of trying to do the same things you do, at least in our area. So I think in out of Mankato, where it was a big hot initiative at one time, it kind of waned because MnDOT picked up everything and started doing a lot of things themselves with transportation. I know the transportation companies because of MnDOT, transit companies because of MnDOT, are now collaborating together in a lot less friendly way than you were going to do it. So it's kind of fun to watch how they do. I've been a strong believer in regional government for a long time, and stronger today than I have been in a long time. So it's kind of fun to see the things that you do for economic development as well as for seniors and various groups. Is there anything unique about any one of your service areas that you do that the other ones perhaps don't?
In my particular area, our area agency on aging is a part of our agency. They cover 21 counties in the state. And in Nicole's region, they also had an area agency on aging there, and there's another one in the Arrowhead District. So it's spread out. We're doing a lot of work with the proverbial less dollars. We're always trying to do more with less. But that's a unique service. We do emergency services planning for our region. That's not necessarily the case across the board. But we try to respond to whatever the needs of the constituents are that we serve. So if there's a need for it, we'll step in to see if that's something that we can help with.
Mr. Chair, we also, at the East Central Regional Development Commission, over the past probably 6 or 8 years now, have formed a pretty constructive partnership with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety in doing highway safety initiatives for trying to reduce serious injury and fatal automobile accidents on our highways, using 4 E's: engineering, enforcement, education, and emergency services. We have a committee that works on strategies and get some federal money that comes through the Department of Public Safety from NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. And we've been successful in reducing DUI arrests in Isani County, especially by a significant amount.
I think thanks, Bob. Don Hagelin again, Upper Minnesota Valley RDC. A couple other projects that are probably unique to point out. They are included on your project sheet here, but one of our colleagues, Jay Trustee from Southwest Minnesota, they've been involved with the energy industry and energy production from the Buffalo Ridge in their area for some time, and they're really looked upon as leaders in the state for some of the work they're doing. You might be familiar with the PACE project that they're really instrumental in Southwest Minnesota, so that's pretty unique to all the RDC work. In our region, again, we're kind of West Central Minnesota, and we've been really involved with the development of the arts and promotion of our tourism assets in our region, and no other RDC is really involved to that level in that sort of work. And again, there's a project that's highlighted that we do on your sheet, which is the Meander Art Crawl.
You're well, thank you. Representative Norton has a question.
Yes, just a quick question. I noticed on your list of things, the very last one says broadband planning. And we do have the new grants, and I wondered if you had been active or participated at all in any of that work.
Yes, thank you. It is. It's exciting, and we were thrilled to have that announcement this week. Our organization did submitted two grants to fill in two of our counties in our region. Big Stone County was awarded some of those dollars, and we're thrilled to be working on that project and with the local telephone co-op, and we look forward to seeing that deployed throughout that county, and we look forward to an opportunity to apply for some of our other counties as well.
Nicole, you had one too, Donnell, Minnesota.
With Martin County's
broadband?
Mm-hmm. So we'll be playing kind of a partnership role in helping support that.
Okay, any other questions from the members? It's certainly good to know what you do, and I'm sure you do it all very well. It's good that you share, because up in the Red River Valley, there's a lot of flooding. The water flows the wrong direction, and the ice comes from the other direction. And there's problems, as you know. I took a tour of the flooded area of Roseau, and it was really fun to sit there and watch that in a helicopter as one section that didn't have any water in it at all, they found a low spot, and all of a sudden you looked around and it was flooded again, because it's just like a pool table. It just really finds the lowest spot. Highest spot is the road around that section.
Mr. Chair, getting the perspective from the air gives it a whole different look.
It really does. Every farmhouse is bunkered, and it was not like where I live at all, down in Fairmont. Other than that, thank you very much. See no more questions. We appreciate all you do, and we'll look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And next we have, in my opinion, one of the best loan managers in the state of Minnesota, the Initiative Funds, and their default rate is very low, and what they do is very high. So welcome to our committee, and We're glad to learn more about the initiative funds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I am Tim Penny, the president of the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation, which serves a 20-county region in south-central, southeastern Minnesota. I believe your staff handed out a summary that was developed by the McKnight Foundation, which gives you a very quick two-page overview of the initiative foundations that serve all of rural Minnesota. Collectively, these six foundations cover the 80 counties of Minnesota that are not part of the seven-county metropolitan region, and in that sense, we align with the purview of this committee very nicely. So again, thank you for having us. I'm here on behalf of the other Initiative Foundation presidents, Tony Sertich of the Northland Foundation in Duluth, Nancy Viscotchel of the Northwestern Foundation in Bemidji, Sandy King of the West Central Initiative Foundation, Kathy Galswick of the initiative in the Little Falls in Minnesota Lakes region, and Diana Anderson of Southwest is not with me today, but her vice president, Scott Marquardt, has joined me. We have a strong history of working in rural Minnesota. We have celebrated now our 27th year of existence. We came into existence in the middle of what was then referred to as the farm crisis in the 1980s. We were seeded by the McKnight Foundation, which at that time was the largest family foundation in the state of Minnesota. They wanted to be helpful to rural Minnesota as not only the agricultural economy but small towns dependent on that economy tried to come back from that recession. And so they, I think, wisely created independent, autonomous foundations, which are now governed by a local board of directors. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we then develop programming and activities that we think is relevant to the economic future of our respective regions. And we have a strong history of performing that work. Thousands of Minnesotans have been involved with our various projects over the years. All of us are involved in some degree of early childhood development. In our case, at the Southern Minnesota Foundation, we provide grants. We provide thousands and thousands of books every year to early reading programs. We are currently undertaking a variety of provider training programs to get our early childhood providers all rated under the Parent-Aware rating system, which will then make families sending children to those facilities eligible for state scholarships and for a bonus under the Child Care Assistance Program. We also are engaged in various activities across the state that go beyond early childhood to other workforce-related issues. In our case, at the Southern Minnesota Foundation, we're not engaged specifically in workforce, but I do know that several of the other initiatives are involved there. There's also some involvement by some of the initiatives in broadband within their region. There's also some efforts in downtown revitalization. We do some of that through our programming at Southern, and I know that that occurs at others as well. And there's some other youth and community leadership programs that are orchestrated by the various initiative foundations. In summary, over the 27 years of our existence, the foundations, because they are involved heavily in economic development and business lending, and frankly, in most cases, that probably comprises about half of our resources each year that are donated or devoted to economic development. We have, as of last summer, $231 million worth of loans that have been issued to business enterprises in our regions, totaling about 4,400 businesses and almost 44,000 jobs that are related to those businesses. And as you said, Mr. Chairman, our default rate across the state through all the initiative foundations is very, very low. And then for all the other activities we may engage in, the early childhood activities and others, our grants as of last summer totaled almost $30 million over those 27 years, and or 30,000 grants over those 27 years, totaling about $173 million worth of grant making that we have issued for a variety of projects and programs. Again, our focus is determined by our board of directors. In our case, at the Southern Foundation, we do three things. We do business investments, primarily through lending and technical assistance. It's about half of our $5 million budget. We do about $2 million a year of work in the early childhood realm. And then we help small towns create community funds and build endowments so that these small towns can invest back in themselves. The other foundations have programming beyond those three areas of work, but that's responsive to what they're hearing from their region and what their board of directors determines. But the one thing that is key to all of our work across the state is that we do our work in collaboration. So our partners include the Chambers of Commerce, the SBDCs, the local EDAs, the rural development groups, which you just heard from a moment ago, the area banks, etc. We believe that leveraging our work with their work really gets more done for our region. So with that, I do want to acknowledge that the state has been helpful to the initiative foundations in the past. When we came into existence, there was $1 million allocation along with McKnight's money to help get these initiative foundations started. In the early 1990s, there was another $1 million allocation, which we have all converted into a revolving loan fund. In our case, we use those dollars to this day, putting out about another $1 million based on the repayments that have been made in gap funding loans in partnership with EDAs and banks, etc. And then in the last session, with your generosity and your leadership, Mr. Chairman, your committee authorized $70,000 for our foundation and for the Southwest Foundation to work with minority entrepreneurs. And I just gave you a report, an interim report, on the degree to which we've actually exceeded our expectations with the use of those dollars. And all of the initiative foundations did get $475,000 for lending. And that money was just released several short weeks ago, so we are now beginning to deploy those dollars within our region. But as I've indicated earlier, we've had good success with our lending activities, helping a lot of businesses start and grow in our region. And so in sum, that's what we do. And if you don't mind, I'll turn it over to Scott Marquardt for any additional comments he might want to make.
I would like to give a good share, if not most of the credit for that increase in funding to Chairman Mahoney. He was very instrumental and he was very impressed with what you did.
Yeah. So the point is that the bulk of our money does come from other resources, mm-hmm. our own endowment yeah. fund, an ongoing grant from McKnight, and then some other foundations that are interested in the kind of work each of our foundations does within our region. Our respective region, but we do get, in our case, about 10% of our roughly $5 million budget from government sources. That includes some money from SBA to do some lending. It would include the money that the state has provided for us to do some lending, and it includes an AmeriCorps program that we administer in our region, and we place all those AmeriCorps personnel in early childhood sites.
Mm-hmm. I remember meeting a person that first told me about the initiative funds, Louis Hofeld.
Oh, yeah.
From the McKnight Foundations. He made a habit of calling me every summer and bringing me up here to have lunch with him. And a fascinating person and a person that was very dedicated to the initiative funds.
Yep. He was McKnight's point of contact with all the initiative.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Scott Marquardt. I am Vice President of Southwest Initiative Foundation. We're based in Hutchinson. We serve 18 counties of Southwest Minnesota, down to Jackson, over to Laverne, and up to Ortonville, everywhere in between. I reside in Montevideo myself. I just would like to tell three quick stories to illustrate our work. All three of these projects we're very proud of. They're skewed to the Southwest region, but I think they're representative of the work statewide of the initiative foundations, and all three had Deed as a partner in it. First and foremost, in Dawson, Minnesota, 17 miles from the South Dakota border, population 1,500, had an empty milk processing plant from AMPI. Local community leaders went to work and recruited Bluegrass Proteins, a company out of Kentucky, to fill that facility. They're going to invest $18 million and put 56 people back to work in that area, many of them who came from that industry and spent decades and decades working there. They were one of the first four businesses to receive funds under the Job Creation Fund. They got about $650,000 from Deed on that, and it's one of the greatest success stories for a border county and something we're very proud of. On the other side of our region, in Lester Prairie, Minnesota, McLeod County, population 1,700, Right Way Manufacturing, right on Highway 7, was emerging from Chapter 11 bankruptcy, had some issues, looking at how we can help retain those 38 people and keep those jobs for those families. Through the support of the State Small Business Credit Initiative, Deed was able to provide a loan guarantee for our loan, and we're able to put about $320,000 worth of capital in there in partnership with the community bank to help keep those jobs in place. We're very proud of that one. That's something else I'd like to lift up, in addition to the partnership with local and state governments, economic development groups. Community banks are a key part of our success story, and I can't say enough about how important it is for the banks in Minnesota that they work with us. We rarely do things on our own, and we often take a subordinated position, but they are our best friends and our partners, and we're very grateful for their support. The last story I want to tell, I'm not a scientist, so bear with me, but Miromatrix Medical, based in Glencoe, Minnesota, they took Dr. Doris Taylor's technology from the U of M, decellularizing animal tissue to make human biomesh. They could be doing that in Boston or in San Diego. They're doing it in Glencoe, Minnesota, on the southeast corner of McLeod County. What's cool about that story is, I think about our region and all of greater Minnesota, the nexus of rural animal agriculture and the intellectual property at the U of M and in the metro coming together. To do that, they're taking animals from southwest Minnesota and the technology there, and I think transforming human health, human life. What's cool about that story is the only other actual debt lender, and there is Deed, put some money into them a long time ago, Risk Capital. And they were able to leverage millions and millions of dollars of angel investment. Thank you for the angel investment tax credit, the angel loan fund, and all you've done in that area. A company like this is going to burn a lot of cash. It's going to need a lot of angel capital. So these are three great success stories we're proud of. In addition to the investments in us, we'd like to thank you and the entire legislature for the investments you make in redevelopment and business finance and broadband at Deed. Those are big deals to our region. Tomorrow I'm going down to Laverne. I think Lieutenant Governor Smith and some others are going to talk about the broadband grant in Rock County. It's a big deal along there. I just want to close with the three things that are on our radar from southwest Minnesota and what's important to us right now. Obviously, you'll hear from everyone, talent and workforce. Nothing more needs to be said by me on that one. But the other two issues we're watching heavily in our region are workforce housing, especially along the I-90 corridor, Worthington and Jackson, all the way up to Windham and around. That is a big deal. And kind of a new issue that's emerging in our region, we're trying to frankly understand our role in it, is childcare availability. We're hearing from communities and from business leaders that their ability to recruit talent is being compromised by childcare availability. We're hearing horror stories of people having to split up their twins in two providers, go on waiting lists for years, and we're trying to understand, is it a market failure? Is it something that can be done in the industry to intervene? So those are the three things we're looking at right now to help keep our businesses making investments and retaining jobs, and we're grateful for all of your support, and I also look forward to submitting our report on our diverse entrepreneurship money. The Hmong population in Walnut Grove, Minnesota, East African population in Worthington, I think we're making a big impact in those areas and helping those folks live their dream. So, thank you.
Representative Barrett, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Markwright, can you tell me, I'm familiar with your area of the state. I grew up in Brandon, okay. South Dakota.
Sure.
You might be familiar with that.
Yeah.
But I know in 85, a long time ago, Laverne Truck and Equipment came over from Laverne, and in the Brandon Industrial Park, and I think I've seen prior to that and even after a little bit, as little as I followed, a lot of other companies follow suit. Can you just explain, do you do a lot of time understanding what your border states are doing, Sioux Falls, Brandon, and can you tell me what they're doing and kind of where your area competes? Because you do such good work, but you do it because you have seen in the past, as I have, maybe companies going across the border. Can you just kind of explain the competition that you're
sure.
up against?
Mr. Markwart.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I'm also a South Dakota transplant, so from Watertown, so I've been following that I-29 corridor basically since I was a youngster. Since we serve the area on the I-29-90 corridor, that is a big deal to us. Ironically, one of our fastest growth areas for loans and investments is in Laverne right now. I think on a per capita basis, that is our highest concentration. And I think what they're looking at is, although there is competition, Beastman Trucking, Laverne, truck parts you're talking about, they are lured. We are watching especially what Sioux Falls and Brookings are doing with incentives, obviously, trying to pull the tax card, trying to pull lower cost. We are concerned if they start being successful and seeing there's a bigger talent base over in those areas. So what we're trying to look at is along that area, if we can't compete with those financial metrics, what can we compete with talent, with labor, perhaps companies in that area, you know, getting a piece of some of the spinoffs from the Sioux Falls Brookings area. I believe Princeco out of Princeburg, Minnesota, I think opened a facility in Beersford, South Dakota, between Sioux Falls and Vermilion. I think that was primarily based on interstate access and talent. So yes, we are trying to watch that heavily and especially look at how we can leverage the angel investors in that area to look at some of the higher growth companies, the startup areas. You know, the interstate system is appealing to them. I think what USD and SDSU and some of the colleges are doing is appealing to them. But, you know, to counter that story, Laverne is one of our shining stars in the area right now. You know, Pipestone's had some challenges with Bayliner closing and with Suzalon. But I look at Jackson, although further in from South Dakota, on a per capita basis, probably one of our highest job counts. So they're figuring it out, too. I think, to be honest with your representative, it's community by community. When the locals have rallied to leverage equity and projects, they've stayed. Midwest Fire, we just did that transaction in Laverne right now. They could have hopped across the border, but they chose to stay because of some of the, you know, intrinsic value of being in Minnesota. And I think it's the talent and the heritage that, you know, South Dakota can't compete with.
Sure. Representative Barron.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I appreciate that, Mr. Marquardt. That's a good summary of what you're doing, the good work you're doing, the challenges you have, and how sometimes you don't always you don't always succeed in preventing these companies from going over, but you certainly put a dent in what they're doing over across the state with lower taxes and certainly a workforce that is comparable to. So I appreciate the work you do for that community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just listen to your presentation. Thank you so much for, although I didn't hear it all, but for the part that I did hear, and one of my interests is child care. And, you know, you speak of the horror stories of a parent having to take one twin to one daycare and another to another daycare because the availability of child care is not there. And as we look at the workforce, you know, in the rural communities and across the state, and we have more parents going to work, I mean, what do you see as a solution to the to that issue, if you have any idea?
Sure, Representative Moran. We're trying to get our hands around it right now. Lacaprell County, ironically, the headquarters of Bluegrass, My First Story, is probably our most organized county on that right now. What they're trying to look at is there something they can do to try to make it more streamline the process, if I may say that, for new providers to get engaged in it. I think there were some challenges identified at the last meeting we had about the licensing process, that there weren't enough folks available either at the county or the state to help new providers get licensed to go through the process. And I think, frankly, folks are getting scared away. We originally thought perhaps it was a lack of capital, so could we provide some higher risk capital to get them going? I don't think that's the issue. I think there could be something with streamlining licensing processes, perhaps the appeals process. If somebody needs a temporary appeal to take another infant for 6 or 7 months, can that be more efficient? And then just also looking at what are the financial realities of centers. We've had communities in our area try child care centers, and I'm not talking New Horizons or some of the metropolitan based, but XYZ nonprofit has come together sometimes with the churches, with local social groups. Some have been successful, some have, you know, not so much. And we're really trying to understand the finances of those. First Children's Finance in the Twin Cities is doing the best they can with the resources they have to provide technical assistance and financing. But for some of these, the realities without subsidy are not working. I live in Montevideo. The community came together with the school district to do a center, significantly subsidized. You know, stay tuned for where those, you know, finances come out for what the cost is for an infant. And if I understand correctly, the regulations, you can have no more than two infants in a home-based childcare center anytime. So, and I don't want to, you know, argue that that should be raised and that's a safety issue, but are we doing everything we can from a regulatory perspective to ensure people can be successful and can make money at it? Your day starts at 5 in the morning, goes till 8 at night, then you start over and maybe you want to sleep. This is a business. these people are essential to our communities, and I honestly think people are retiring and they're just not getting filled.
If I can tag on that response, 3 years ago we provided a rather sizable grant to First Children's Finance and Child Care Resource and Referral. Child Care Resource and Referral is more about the academic training for early childhood teachers or providers. Mm-hmm. And First Children's Finance is all about the financial success and in keeping your books and you know, managing your budget. And we did that in two counties, Watonwan County and Brown County, and put a lot of child care providers, including in-home providers, through that training of both academics and business. And based on that partnership, they then began to take that same training program around to all other rural regions in Minnesota. So more and more providers are being availed of that training. And it's important to improve the academic standing, because if you're parent aware rated, you can get scholarships for certain families, lower income families, and you can get a bump in your child care assistance payment if that family places their children in your center and your center has that rating. So financially that makes a big difference. But learning how to keep your books and managing your books better is a huge part of this as well, and that's why all of us, all the initiatives, are partnering with the First Children's Finance to bring that training to our regions.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
Thank you. So it seems like to me that as we look at job growth and as we look to bringing more jobs out into communities, that we have to really look at how we're going to provide care for those families and those children in that you're looking for to create a stronger workforce.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, understanding the finances, and just one last anecdotal piece on that, DigiKey. We have made aware is child care is such an issue for them up there that they're actually providing subsidies to the providers in the Thief River Falls area if they'll take a DigiKey employee's child. I may be getting elements of that story wrong, but I think companies are even stepping to the plate with cash because there's a failure in the market to do mm-hmm. something. Again, it is a business. Folks deserve to make a dollar off of it, but the companies are paying the price because sick children's overnight shifts, it's we're struggling.
Yeah. Thank you.
Y'all fish?
Yes.
Okay. I know in one of Tim's favorite towns, Blue Earth, the U.S. Rural Development helped establish a daycare center there that was very, very much a big surprise. It's a community daycare center and very well built and organized, and I was very impressed with it. And the biggest concern, one of the biggest concerns that AGCO has in Jackson is daycare. And so daycare is so essential. Housing, you mentioned. I wonder how many more employees we'd have with Suzlon if we would have had housing in Pipestone. And that's something that's prevalent throughout the whole state. So I appreciate your input. Any other? Oh, Representative Norton, excuse me.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you both for your testimony. I want to thank you for your focus on early childhood, and I know Smith's done a lot down in our area, but also this interest in child care. It is vital. Having a daughter that worked in that area, the pay was so bad she could hardly wait to find a job that she could actually pay her student loans back with. So I do think pay and finances are part of the problem, but as you pointed out, it's larger than that. So thank you for your work, and please continue. I also wanted to thank you for your support of our small businesses, entrepreneurs, development, and the gap loan funding. I think your answer to Representative Barrett's question was very helpful. I think sometimes, and not this committee necessarily, but overall in politics, we like to try to point to one thing and say that's the problem. And I think it's a variety of things, and you mentioned many of them. It's our environment, sometimes regulation and rules in our state, but we also sometimes offer perks and benefits. And you painted a very balanced picture, which I appreciated. But the one thing you did mention, and here's my question, you mentioned angel investment tax credits. This committee is going to, and has already heard a little bit, a few bills about that, but the larger committee last year and the last several years have been funding that program. And we hear it has good turnaround, but we have been concerned that it's not getting out into rural Minnesota enough. We made some changes to the law last year, and I think perhaps again this year we can bump it up, but we're not getting the applications, at least that's what we're hearing, from rural Minnesota investors and businesses both. So do you have any insights, either of you, about how we might improve that?
Well, I appreciate that in the last session you did reserve a portion of those tax credit dollars for rural. Beyond a certain point, then it goes back into the larger pool. So it's sort of use it quickly or you may not get it. But at least that's a step in the right direction. I think part of the challenge in rural is that we don't have a lot of indigenous equity investment going on the part of equity groups. We do have individuals that make those investments, and I trust that they're on their own looking into the tax credit and how they might qualify. But what we've decided to do in our region is to set up an equity fund under our own umbrella at the foundation. Our board authorized taking $3 million off of our endowment fund and creating an equity investment program. And we've now built a process around that where we do due diligence on equity opportunities. And we've also begun to reach out to other equity groups within the region, like Rochester Area Economic Development and Mayo Medical Ventures. There's also a new organization up in Red Wing called Red Wing Ignites. And we're trying to build a partnership with these other groups in our region that are interested in equity investments so we can begin to move some deal flow through our region, do some joint due diligence, and then do some joint investments. And the more that builds and the more investment opportunities we investigate, the more we will then have investors within our region that can tap and take advantage of that angel tax credit. So this is just in the early phases. We've only made three investments so far. Last fall, the first two investments we made were in partnership with Mayo Medical Ventures and Rochester Economic Development. But we're trying to build that same kind of joint investment partnership with Red Wing, with Northfield, with other communities within our region. And I think as it builds and grows, we'll get to a point where we'll begin tapping more of these tax credit dollars for our region. And I don't know what's going on in the Southwest, but I think they're eager to find ways to tee up more investment opportunities in their region that would qualify for those credits as well.
Yeah, Representative North, we did two deals ourselves last year, both related to ag, but in addition to what Tim had mentioned, we're also building our relationship with groups like Gopher Angels and Angel Pollination. Gopher Angels, I believe we're both paid members of that group. They're really taking a lot of the work that the old Minnesota Angel Network has done with the database there and the investors, and a lot of investors throughout Minnesota. The founders of that have roots in rural area, so that they understand, I think, what we're trying to accomplish out here, and they're sincerely trying to get to know groups like us to get a two-way street of both deals and investments. I think there's a lot of folks in the Twin Cities that would have an interest in transactions out here, but I think there's a lack of awareness, frankly, and a lack of connections. Long, long overdue, but I think we can try to make up some lost time with what David and Sarah and the leadership of that group are doing, and I'm confident 2015 and 16 there'll be a change, because right or wrong, there's been the bears before. So much lack of awareness. There's good investment opportunities in greater Minnesota, and I think it's a two-way street.
And so, Mr. Chair,
Jen Norton,
just so we don't have to call you back, I know the chair has a different version of an angel investment bill that came through this committee before that not only increases slightly the amount of angel investment funds, but also has a larger portion going to rural Minnesota. Am I hearing that you might be supportive of that type of bill? Or can you not say?
I think we'd like that, but we also understand that it's up to us to, you know, generate enough activity that those dollars are accessed, and we also realize that if in any given year we fall short of that goal, that then the dollars need to go where the opportunity lies.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Seeing no questions, you have any parting statements?
No.
Oh, excuse me. David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got a question. I've been on the board of the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board for 13 years, and so I'm going to ask a question, and if you say the wrong answer, I'll really look dumb. But I have to ask, you know, we've been lucky in the Northeast to have kind of an angel system of our own. And we've funded some huge projects. But do we does our staff consult with you folks for the need from time to time of angel investment in projects that come before our staff for evaluation?
Yes. That's the short answer. And in each region, we have our own partners, whether it's the Rural Development Commissions or the IRRRB or local economic development agencies. In each region, there are different partners with whom we collaborate, but our goal is to have a good working relationship so that when it makes sense to be at the same table, we're at the same table, and we're leveraging one another's expertise as well as pooling those investment dollars.
Okay, thank you. I guess I wasn't aware of that. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I mean, we get to the board table and evaluate a project, and
yeah.
I guess I just wasn't aware of that.
At the staff level, if it's something that an agency can handle all on their own, you know, they may not reach out. But if it's a big project, then at the staff level, all the players, including regional banks, will be in the mix,
right.
and the package will be put together.
I just have one more question. And thanks for that. Thanks for that. It's good to know. I really support the angel investment credit because some of our community needs some angels. And so I'm wondering about the ratio per capita of people that come forward and ask. I'm thinking about the number of entrepreneurs in a community. Is the number of entrepreneurs in a community by capita more centrally located in the more populated areas? And that's the reason I ask per capita. Because, I mean, you know, we're pretty rural. I have four complete counties, and we're pretty sparsely populated. But it seems to me that we have for our population, we have a fair number of entrepreneurs up there. And let me just suggest one of them is Larry Lettinen for Magnetation, and then former the person who invented Masaba Nugget. And that's a pretty substantial operation, 500-600 people employed, high wages. But then on down, and we've got Sagentis that's coming in, and I'm just wondering how that plays out between rural. And I hear that we're going to reserve money for outstate Minnesota. It almost feels like we're reserving money and then waiting for people to come rather than finding the people and providing them the resources. Now, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and I don't want to know about it.
The answer I gave earlier about the rural demand for the angel tax credit is really I think it's really a factor of how aware are folks of that investment program, which is why for our part we're not only promoting that within the region, we're trying to partner with other equity investors to create a pipeline, which would then, I think, increase demand for those dollars. So I think it's a work in progress right now. It's in the Twin Cities, you have an awful lot of firms that are heavily involved in supporting the equity investment community up here, and so the infrastructure in a sense was already in place the minute that law was passed. We're trying to build that infrastructure in rural right now. I think there are just as many entrepreneurs per capita out there as there are in the metro area, but I think we have to build awareness of this tax credit, and then we have to build the network and the infrastructure in rural to position folks to take full advantage of that.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
You here.
Members of the committee.
Next we have John Sullivan. We have Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. And John Sullivan, welcome to our committee.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. Thanks for allowing me to be here. It's just me. Let you off the hook a little easy here. I have a few handouts for you in your packets that's black. The first one I'm going to show you is the blue on the top. And just a little bit about MAPSED. I'm on the executive board of MAPSED. It's the Minnesota Association of Professional County Economic Developers. And we have approximately 40 members representing 40 counties within the state of Minnesota. Not all of the counties in Minnesota have an economic development director person to be part of it. So we don't have every county involved, but we have a pretty good diverse range of metro and non-metro counties involved. I just wanted you to be able to see who the existing member counties were and what we do to work towards fulfilling our mission. So I have that here for informational purposes for you. The next piece is also blue and white, if you'd hold it up next in the packet. This is the 2015 MAPSED legislative priorities. And each year, our group of all the economic developers in each county, we get together about four times a year, and we talk about what our legislative platform will be for that year. Very soon, in fact, next week, we will be at the Economic Development Day at the Hill, talking about our platform, economic development, how the programs are working. And Mr. Chair, you've been an attendee and a participant in that in past years, as have I, and I thank you for that. Our next presenters, the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, are the ones that organized that event. And it's a great event that I'm really proud to be a part of every year. So I'm not going to go through all the different legislative platform ideas. Like guests prior, I think people like to hear stories. I think they like to hear, you know, what do you do during your day job? You know, what are the battles? What are the successes? What are the failures? And I've been the economic development for my day job. I'm the economic development director for Carver County. And it'll be 10 years this summer that I've been there. I've been in economic development for 26 years, which is still hard to imagine. But I guess I wanted to show you the next sheet. It's called Carver County CDA Loan Performance through December 2014. There's a chart on it, and I wanted to show you, as an economic developer, as a county economic developer, what I do. We have a business loan fund that we run, and we started the business loan fund in 2009. And if you think about that time, that was a really difficult time to be doing loans of any kind, because most banks weren't lending, most businesses weren't expanding, and everybody was panicking. Nonetheless, we started the loan fund because we were hearing from local businesses and local banks that there was a need for true gap lending and gap financing. And the program's been very successful. Fast forward to now, this is a snapshot of our loans. They're all performing and current. We've had no defaults, and we've been criticized a little bit about that because they're saying, you know, we're not taking enough risk. Our county commissioners truly appreciate that we have a 0% default rate rather than a high default rate. Basically, what our approach is that we don't do direct loans. We only do participation gap loans with banks. Typically, a typical loan request that we'll get is usually driven by a company or a bank. And let's just say it's $1 million project. Typically, what happens is a bank will call and say, we have a company and they're looking at expanding. Or a city in our community would call and they'll say, John, we need some help. Typically, there's always a gap in a project. A bank will typically do about 70% of the loan, roughly. and the borrower typically has about anywhere from 10 to 15% equity that they can put in the deal. But there's always that gap of about 10 to 15% that needs to be placed into the project to make it work, create jobs, and increase the tax base. As you can see on the chart, we've got several different companies, and they're diverse. Auto Body Specialties was a real small project, $50,000, in Norwood Young America, which is in the western edge of Carver County, small rural town. Neat project. Auto body guy, been doing it forever, retired. We helped finance somebody to take it, buy it, and get it going, and it worked really well. Topaz Investments in Chaska, that was a redevelopment of a former law office, historic Chaska brick, 115-year-old building, and it was redeveloped for a treatment facility. Very successful project. Ground Round Waconia, I don't know about you, but I didn't even know Ground Rounds was still around. So we did a restaurant project, not our typical project for the loan fund, but as you can see, there was 70 jobs. Actually, they have 79 jobs, but at the time they applied, they had said they'd have 70 jobs. That's out on Highway 5 in Waconia, next to Ridgeview Medical Center. That's been a really successful place. You go there on a Friday or a Saturday, you got to wait to get in. It's really been a neat project. It's worked out really well. We did that project in 2011, and it's still doing really well. ATHC in Watertown, that's Adult Training Habilitation Center. That's an industrial recycling plant in a new industrial park in Watertown. And I took kind of the lead role in that project in putting that deal together. And what it is, it's a recycling plant, and people that used to be on welfare are now working at that plant full-time, recycling things and making our environment better. So that's been a real great success story. Vickerman out of Norwood Young America, we financed that project in the summer of 2013. Has anybody heard of Vickerman Christmas trees? Does that ring a bell? They make Christmas trees, ornaments, and all that kind of stuff, but they've branched out into a lot of different products. They've been extremely successful. We helped them expand. We put $150,000 into that project, and we created 16 jobs. Beckman Coulter, that's in Chaska. That was a really big project. That ended up creating 106 jobs. Coincidentally, the average wage, that's the highest average wage we've ever created out of our loan fund. The average wage in that project is $104,000 a year. Beckman Coulter is a fantastic company. They're a division of Danaher, and what they do is they set up a research and development facility in Chaska for blood and diagnostic tests for diseases for hospitals and doctors, and they're just growing by leaps and bounds. That's been a great project. Needful Things was a small project downtown. This just shows how diverse our loan fund is. It's a basically a retail store for women, and it's a woman-owned business, and we funded that project. That's been very successful. Super Radiator Coils in Chaska, that's a great company. Super Radiator Coils has three different locations. They have a location in Arizona, they have a location in Chaska, and they have a location in Richmond, Virginia. John Holt is the president. He's a really interesting guy. We were driving in the car to the Greater MSP Economic Development meeting one day, and he said, John, he said, I think I want to expand. He says, why should I do it in Chaska? You're the economic development guy. Tell me why. So I told him, I said, our economic development team, including all of me, is fantastic, and I'll get the project done for him. His workforce that he has there is fantastic. And I said, we've got a great new program through the state called the Job Creation Fund that would be perfect for him. And we just had the groundbreaking the other day, 28,000 square feet, beautiful facility. It's so cool you can eat off the floor, I swear. And it's really successful. Union shop, great wages, and Super Radiator Coils, what they make is cooling coils for not only refrigeration and grocery stores, but they do it for data centers. That's been a great business. And they also do it for the nuclear industry. And then I have another project in Norwood Young America, PPI, that's a manufacturer that's pending closing. As you can see, the CDA through our loan fund. We put in $1,230,000. We've leveraged a total of investments of over $17 million, and we've had 277 jobs created. So we're really proud of that, and it seems to be working really well. I have a sample loan project on the bottom of the Vickerman Norwood Young America project, so you can get a look and see how that one worked. If you turn the page, I'm going to shift now a little bit to another program we run, which is called the Open a Business Program. The Open a Business Program is for really small companies that might take a lot more individual counseling and time that I might have. So what we did was we partnered with the MCCD, Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, and the program's called Open a Business. And what we do is we have anybody that wants a startup, small company, $2,000 loan, $5,000 loan, the really small ones to come in and not only get technical assistance and advice and some hand-holding and maybe even tax assistance. And we started that program in 2012. If you turn the page to this, it shows Open a Business in green up in the upper left corner. This is a snapshot of just our last year, what we did. We had served 26 new entrepreneur startup companies and 18 existing businesses and 4 miscellaneous type things. We also financed 9 different projects. The industry segments were fairly broad: retail, service, food, health, fitness, manufacturing, and construction. And the cities, as you can see, it was, it had a little bit of focus on Chaska, but a lot of the other cities like Carver, Chanhassen, and Waconia, Watertown also got involved. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about briefly is if you look on the last page of the handout, what I have is this multicolored sheet. This was a tool developed by the University of Minnesota Extension Service, and it was done for MAPSED, and it's the MAPSED measurement tool. And what this is for all county economic developers, we can take this new program developed by the University of Minnesota, and we can track our projects. We can enter in, what projects did we do. So if you look for my economic development projects in 2014, I had 5 that I put in there. I had 163 new jobs. I retained 9. And the total capital investment was $47,603,000. Tax base increased $37,506. Now, in a couple years, that'll go way up because it hasn't been taxed yet. There's the delay. But private capital, $43 million, public resources, $4 million. As you can see on the right-hand side, the program utilization, it's come from county, it's come from city, it's come from state deed, regional, small business administration. It's a nice mix. So I'm using this as a tracking tool, so when I come back to the legislature and testify, or when we have economic development day on the Hill, we can put some numbers behind it other than just saying, hey, we want money or we want some project funding. So with that, I guess I'll leave it back to you to see if you have any questions of me.
See any questions? Representative Norton?
Yeah, just quickly, I'm interested in your tool from the university. Is this free? Did you purchase it? Did they loan it to you? Is it available to other folks to track their expenditures and...
Representative Norton, that's a great question. Yeah, it was just developed, and we're just using it. The MAPSED group is using it, and it's past the beta test point now. So yeah, it's available. Anybody that would want to use it could certainly use it. And Neil Linscheid is the guy at University of Minnesota Extension, and I can get you all of his contact information. And there's a video that he has, a YouTube video, and it shows you how to use it. But even I can do this. It's pretty easy. Thank you.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't want to hijack the conversation here because my question is kind of in the broader. And Mr. Salk and Representative Norton, you may have helped me with a little bit of the answer to my question, but I have a big question probably for this committee, and I'm not exactly sure who to ask. I will try to be as brief as possible, and that does mean brief, I promise, Mr. Chair. everyone in this room, I first, the people that are coming in with their agencies, I want to thank you for all the work that you do, and I'm sure you're skilled, you're experienced, well-qualified, and I know that your goals are very well-merited. So what I'm about to ask now, please don't misunderstand that part when I ask a couple tough questions. As I was preparing for this meeting, and we've been having meetings on workforce and economic development over the past week or so, I added up just in my county alone, we have probably like 10 plus workforce related agencies, plus, 10 plus economic development agencies, plus workforce agencies, all being funded by taxpayers. My first question is there a way that we can differentiate between the work that they do? Because there's, using your form here, and I'm not picking on you because this is just helpful because it was on the top, but I see the words workforce, broadband, marketing, transportation, economic development, and ironically at the top it says efficient government operations. So, but all the different agencies that have come through have had flavors of those different things. How do all these agencies work together, and how can we measure the outcomes? That's where I appreciate your question about this, because this is fantastic. But how can we measure? Because please don't misunderstand. I don't want to disregard the work that everyone is doing in this room, but we are spending a lot of money on about five or six different subjects across multiple agencies. And I'm just hunching there's two true statements in that somewhere. Number one, there are not efficiencies with how they're working together in the same communities. And number two, there's probably some that are working better than others. So I don't know who to ask the question to, perhaps to you, Mr. Chair, but how can we move towards, I'm sorry for all the angst, but it's been building up all week and now you have me thrown up all over the table here. But how can we address some of these issues? Because when I vote to approve for taxpayer-spent money, it's hard for me when I don't even know if it's going to what it's intended to do. And that's no disregard for the work that you're doing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Norton.
Well, I will just answer that slightly because I don't think our testifier needs to be put on the spot here. But over you raised the same questions many of us have raised over the years, and we've had bipartisan support for accountability in these departments. There is a large effort that started seven years ago, so that we can ask the departments about return on investment. So at least through the Office of Economic Development, all the things that are funded now have a return on investment formula that they can share with you. But that's exactly the type of work that we've been doing in this committee or committees like this over the years, whether it be Chair Gunther or Chair Mahoney, to try to make certain that when we ask people about effectiveness, when we do invest money, that there is a good return on investment, and we're able to say, yes, there is, or like you, I don't want to fund them either. So I think there are some overlap in the departments, but sometimes it's because one project has its fingers in multiple agencies. It doesn't mean there's always duplication, although I think that's a fair question to ask. But I'll let Mr. Chair continue on a little bit more, because he's been part of some of the work on trying to improve efficiency over the years.
Years ago, when Chairman Trimble was chairman of the Jobs Committee, and that was years ago, we came up with a job criteria bill that we sent out to every job training program we could think of, and people that we couldn't think of had to report what their mission was, what they did, how many people they served, and things like that. With the things that we were interested in is how efficient are you? Are you duplication? Are you inefficient? Unnecessary? We found out originally there was 82. And then we put a little teeth in it. He said, failure to report this means you won't be funded the next year. And we had 171. And the funny thing about it is there were seven different departments of state government. We were just looking at state-funded ones. And there was obviously a lot of overlap, a lot of inefficiency. And I think later on, Governor Ventura's staff said that we could probably cut the cost in half and just fund half of them and be ahead. They spent $270 million a year, by the way. And these were government-sponsored ones that were obvious duplications through state government departments. Department of Health and Human Services, Ag, they all had theirs. There's obviously a lot of overlap. I didn't pursue it much more because I have been focused on getting jobs for people for years. And if any one of them created 10 jobs, to me that's a positive thing. So I could have gone to get most of them eliminated or half of them. But I thought, well, if somebody else wants to do it, let them have at it. It was unfortunate. So far, no reason to want to do it. If you want to do it, I got the information in my office. But it is something that should be done. I think a lot of them that were there are no longer there. We probably have some new ones. But by and large, they all were focusing on getting people jobs and getting people trained for jobs. And the worst one is better than no one. So that's kind of the way I kind of looked at it. And we kind of created quite a deal because they made a big report out of it. And it unfortunately was called the Gunther Report, which put me under a little pressure. They're still using it in some places. Governor Workforce Development Center is using it. Yeah, Representative Dill.
Well, it couldn't be more aptly named, the Gunther Report. You have done a wonderful job and had your heart in the right place on this. You know something, I'm sitting here listening to this. Economic development for me is really easy because I do it myself. But when I've tried to work with other people to do it, when I say I do it for myself.
You do too.
Okay. However, when you try to help other people with economic development, with ideas, to whether it be, you know, an angel type situation, or, you know, trying to raise equity or trying to get a patent or all these things, they're so complicated, it's so confusing, it's so difficult that it takes a lot of people and it takes a lot of public investment to get to the end of that road. And the day this committee, if this committee took an approach that we were going to starve that seed capital, and I'm not saying we are, boy, you would see really wanna, you know, I've never got a dime of public money for what I do, but I can see that there is a great need for it, particularly with people that help people to get to some place of a goal. And that's the reason I'm on a committee, is because I just, and you know, I mean, I'm partial to the rural community. It feels to me like it's a lot easier to do economic development in the Twin Cities. I'm not sure why that is. I asked the question about the per capita entrepreneurs. I think I knew the question, the answer, because I mean, a lot of our entrepreneurs are out cutting wood for a paper mill. You know, they're not, but they also use computers. So this is a tough business, and voting for public money at this point in my life to support economic development, as much as sometimes it's almost like flying in the clouds without instruments, it's kind of hard. And so I'm really in support of it, and I think the folks have done a really good job.
Yeah, Representative Norton.
Well, I was just going to follow up to the comment that was made. I think the question that was raised here at the table is really maybe something we could do at another time. I think we've got one more presentation.
Yes.
Because it's a big question. I think it's something that we will grapple with in from every bill that comes forward, with every group that comes forward. But Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask, in light of kind of the discussion here, if you have time, even for a partial presentation, maybe about the Office of Economic Development's work on accountability. They have spent years trying to put together something so that when someone like you or me, who comes to this table for the first time, as I did, and said, you're funding 25 programs, and we're telling you, this was in the budget cutting years, you need to cut. And they say, we want to cut 10% across the board. To me, that's a bad answer. I want to cut the ineffective program or the inefficient program. And they weren't able to tell me when I first got here. And I suspect now, I hope now, after all the work they've been doing over the last few years, that they can tell us now what they do if we ask that question. And hopefully we don't even have to ask it. My hope is when they divvy out money and when they give grants out, they'll do it because they qualify and there's a good return on investment. But Mr. Chair, perhaps if you have, you know, even a short period of time during one of the committees, we could ask them to come. Okay, thank you. I think it'd be helpful.
John, I want to also mention that you are tremendously under pressure at home where you, in Carver County, because people don't always see what you're doing.
Right.
And if you aren't producing results all the time, you aren't doing your job. And I've heard that so many times you can't believe it. If they only knew all of the things that you do, they'd end up in a dead end. I appreciate you, and I just wish we could give you more tools so you could be more effective.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate that, and members of the committee. I thank you for allowing me to be here. It's a lot better than 2009. Things have gotten a lot better.
I think we have one more question. Representative Barrett?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just Representative Miller's point and a little bit to Representative Norton. I will have a bill. I'm working on a bill now that looks, that attempts to understand, document, and analyze the results of the various economic development programs we have in Minnesota. Not necessarily the organizations involved, although that's a very intriguing idea. Because it's obviously related, but just the programs. And it really, I think for me, the first meeting we had in which we had a bunch of economic development opportunities that people could take advantage of, but I asked the question about which ones were working and effective. And, you know, it's hard to understand that unless you actually make an attempt to understand it. And so I'm not sure that anyone has been doing that. Maybe they are. I shouldn't say that, but I'm not aware of it myself. So anyway, it's an area I'm pursuing myself and would love to get feedback on that and support for if it's the right thing to do. Thanks.
Appreciate that. Thank you for coming. And you did very well by yourself.
Yep. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, just real quickly, I want to punctuate. I commend you on this. This is fantastic. This is really simple. And you said someone in the extension did that?
Yes. Representative, this is the punchline, if you will. I have a lot of data backing
sure.
up, but I didn't want to fill you up with that. The actual projects and the tax base and everything, it's a formula. It's a spreadsheet, and it gets all put together, and I think it's great, and I'm using it for my county work, and I know some of my cohorts are as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have EDEM, one of my favorite organizations. Please come up and give your name for the record and testify. I look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for having us. My name is Matt Brown. I work in economic development for the city of Coon Rapids in the North Metro. And as you said, Mr. Chair, I'm here today on behalf of the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, or EDEM is the acronym. I serve on the board of directors of that organization and also serve as vice chair of its government relations committee. My colleague Jean Spaulding is also joining me as the chair of that committee. EDEM is a statewide association of economic development professionals. We represent diverse models of local development agencies, from very small agencies to very large. We have over 500 members from all across Minnesota. Our membership is approximately 50-50 public sector and private sector. It's also about 50-50 metro area and greater Minnesota, so we're very proud of that. To be clear, we are a membership organization. We're a 501c6 nonprofit organization, so we are funded entirely by member dues. We don't receive funding directly from the state. Our membership does include many regional economic development organizations from all over the state. That includes Greater MSP, which is the privately funded Regional Economic Development Association here in the Twin Cities. Our members also include regional economic development organizations in Mankato, Duluth, and the Arrowhead area, Rochester, St. Cloud, Fargo-Moorhead, and others around the state. Our members have a strong track record of working together to promote economic development in all parts of the state. I think we've done a good job of bridging geographic and demographic divides. As you can see, our Government Relations Committee traditionally has a chair and vice chair who represent different parts of the state, often urban and rural areas. Our annual legislative platform, which Jean will talk about in just a minute, is based on input from members of from all parts of the state. And your previous testifier, Mr. Sullivan, had alluded to the fact that next week, on Wednesday, we'll be hosting Economic Development Day at the Capitol, where we'll bring economic development professionals from around the state and in, and hopefully they'll be able to talk with many of you about positive projects and their experiences in their parts of the state. Nick DiGiulio is our government relations staff person, who maybe many of you know. Most importantly, we want to be a resource to you. Our members from around the state can easily find a business owner or a mayor to talk with you about their experiences and how projects have transpired all around the state and can attest to how different economic development tools have been used. So I will turn things over to Jean.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jean Spaulding, and I represent Willmar and Candiota County Economic Development Commission. So good afternoon to you, Representative Miller. He is in my district, so we can have a conversation offline on some of our work. But what I do want to talk about today is the platform that the Economic Development Association is working on for this year. I'm not going to go through the entire document because I want to be respectful of your time, but I am going to talk about a few of our high points and maybe the philosophies behind those for our membership. First of all, I think Matt talked about our members are statewide, and so we really look to that diverse voice when we're looking for what are the hot topics and what are the things that people are most concerned about in their communities. And so we did a survey at the beginning of our and did a lot of input sessions with our members to get to where we are with this document. We also hosted an industry economic development meeting, and we're happy to have done that for a few different years. And we had 15 different economic development statewide or industry level organizations that participated. And we feel that it's important to, if there's an opportunity to before session, to really talk about what we think are some of the high points to get that discussion and some collaboration out ahead of the beginning of the session. And so EDIM has been very happy to be able to do that for the last couple of years. In our platform, we don't have these listed in any certain priority, but tax increment financing is one of the most effective local economic development tools. And one of the things that we feel is the statute itself has been used many different and amended many different times. One of the I think challenges, especially for smaller economic development organizations, is that it's a bit cumbersome, and because of that, there can be some added costs to small organizations in trying to work through the world of tax increment financing. And so we feel that if there was a streamlined statute, that might be beneficial. That isn't easy work to get through, but we just feel that that's something that would be effective. Also, there are many different kinds of districts. Economic development districts, we believe, are obviously very important to all of our communities. We would recommend or be an advocate for extending the economic development districts to 10-year districts, or at least 9 years of increments or when the tax is collected. And another expansion under the economic development districts, if they could be used for business retention and expansion projects, so it'd be an expanded purpose. You've heard a lot about workforce housing, and that was something that came up frequently in our survey as well. And so I can assure you that it's something that all of the communities are talking about. What our thought was is that workforce housing, TIF or abatement, might be a tool that should be considered that currently isn't allowable under market rate workforce housing. And so that might be a solution that could be looked at in that discussion. Something that you haven't heard about, and I think I'd really like to talk about today, is economic development marketing. DEED has been mentioned many times today, and we are all very, very good partners with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Our region has had the opportunity to participate with DEED and other communities on site selector FAM tours, and that's where we're bringing in site selectors to Minnesota from other parts of the country. At the conclusion of those meetings, they've had panel sessions where those site selectors have spoken back to us on what their reactions were to the tours, how we can improve them, and really what they see as opportunities for the state of Minnesota. What we have learned in the last few years is that site selectors, which are typically clustered in areas like New York City, Chicago, and Dallas, and then on the West Coast, they know nothing about Minnesota. We are a flyover zone for them, and when they find out more about us, they're very intrigued. And so we don't have our current marketing for opportunities with site selectors and other economic development tools are all done through partnerships, which are great, but it just isn't enough. When we look at what the opportunities are in those areas, we would be an advocate for funds that would be allocated specifically for some target markets. We would see site selectors, targeted industries campaigns. I know that Greater MSP has a focus, for example, on headquarter companies. That's what they are looking for the Twin Cities. We think that there should be a branding strategy. We've really lost that, you know, we really don't have a branding of Minnesota outside of our area. And we also feel like foreign direct investment would be another target area that could be a really good return on investment for Minnesota. So we would ask that you consider that as you look at projects for this year. One of the things that we learned at one of our educational sessions just last week in is that Minnesota is known very well for the companies it produces. I mean, you can go globally and people will know the companies, but nobody knows they're from Minnesota. That's where we're at today, is that people know the companies more than they know Minnesota. And so we've got work to do in changing that. And so that's one of the things that you'll see in our platform is we would be an advocate for. New Market Tax Credits is a program that really focused on low-income census tracts economic development. We also feel that there's broadband grants were awarded this week, and we're really excited to be watching and learning on best practices that are going to come from those grant opportunities and what other parts of the state can do in accessing broadband. My area in Kanduay County is one of the areas that is really lacking in broadband. We've got, when you look at the Connect Minnesota maps, we're one of the red zones. But it's difficult work when you're working with private providers. We held meeting after meeting with them to put together grants. And so there needs to be more work. And it, you know, it's not an easy fix, but it needs to, we can't afford not to be doing that work. Lastly, we really want to thank work of the legislature in the programs with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. DEED has been a great partner for all of us. Some of the programs that have been especially helpful, I think, are the Minnesota Investment Fund. Those are programs, redevelopment has great track records. We have great examples of how those programs are leveraged and do terrific work all over Minnesota. One of the new programs that's been talked about is Job Creation Fund, and I think one of the things that we particularly like about that program is it brings the accountability that you've been talking about because of it's performance-based. So the funding isn't awarded until you produce the outcomes that you talked about in your application. So we think that those are really great changes, and we're anxious to be able to use those. Lastly, we just want to conclude by saying that EDM is a resource. We really would like to have you think of our membership and our communities as places that you can go to and call to when you have questions about how legislation is going to impact a community, and especially for economic development. We're the people out there on the streets that are working directly with the businesses, with the programs that are being funded through DEED and other programs. And so we'd like to be able to have the opportunity to share with you and work with you on ways to improve. And I guess with that, I would be open to any questions.
Is there any effort in the state to be able to market what Minnesota is, Greater Minnesota or Metro, either one, what Minnesota is in other states and other areas. I look at Chicago, they say that could be the next Detroit. They are suffering a little bit. And I would like to be able to market Minnesota to the Chicago area businesses. I'm not saying they should all flee, but I think some of them will. Detroit certainly went through that. I look at Michigan today, they're growing and they're prospering like never before. It's just Detroit's got a leg a little behind, but it'll catch up. But it would be nice to be able to go down to Iowa and raid some of their businesses, since I live 12 miles from there.
Well, we wouldn't disagree with that. We think that there's opportunities, and we really, I think that the state has done really well with what they have, and they leveraged the current programs are all based on partnerships with economic development organizations like ours and IRRRB and others. But it just, when we found out that how little even the site selectors in Chicago know about Minnesota, that's kind of scary.
And I know when we look on a per capita basis in Minnesota, traditionally we, at the statewide level, business development marketing has been funded generally at a very low level on a per capita basis. Mm-hmm. South Dakota is spending a lot more, Michigan, Illinois, a lot of our peer states are, whether it's spending money or just making the effort to have a comprehensive statewide business development marketing program. And the state staff who are working on that are colleagues of mine, and I think they're doing a great job with what they have. But that is an area in Minnesota that I think we're a little bit lacking.
And we do have the Invest Minnesota Marketing Initiative that is already in place. But it's something that we have to be constantly aware of. Iowa, in order to have growth compared to our Minnesota Investment Fund, MIF funds, they have $255 million. They just voted in $55 million more. We are doing very well today under Governor Dayton, and we had the most money we've had in that fund for a long time. And I sure am glad he was an economic developer at one time, because it's sure helping us this way. But I think we need to have more of an emphasis on things that would give you more tools to market Minnesota and market your own markets.
One point that Mr. Chair, the tax credit program that's been discussed earlier, I know that one of the ideas coming from a rural area that was brought up, and I don't know if it has merit or not, but I think it would be beneficial is if there was two funding periods, a January and perhaps a July, so that it would start the program different, and so that you wouldn't have such a rush to that January period. When I've talked to entrepreneurs in my area, you really have to start them thinking in October and kind of ramp them up for a January or first of the year, because the program really, I think, runs out of money in past years, and with the added funds, it goes a little bit longer, but it has been pretty much first quarter. So that might be a suggestion.
If you would put those things down.
Pardon me?
And send them to me.
Sure.
We'll try to put it in our bill. That's Representative Norton's suggestion, and I agree with it.
Oh.
Well, is there any questions any members have? Thank you very much for your coming here. We learned a lot from you, and you got us down just in perfect time. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
And with that, we're adjourned.